Act 3 deals entirely with Macbeth and the witches. He has gone back to them to find out what will happen. They answer him through the three apparitions who assure him that he will not be killed by man of woman born. There's also a 10-minute long ballet that is sometimes omitted in performance.
This is Verdi's ninth opera, and it premiered in 1847 in Florence. He subsequently revised it at the request of the Paris Opera. They requested this in 1864. They wanted a ballet added, which he did, but at the same time he made revisions and corrected some things about which he was unhappy or just wanted to add something. So he added the soprano aria, La Luce Vuol Langue, which comes at the beginning of the second act. He revised the Refugees chorus and made some changes in that, I think making it harmonically and rhythmically more interesting, because this had been a period of 17 years during which, in a time, he had moved well into his middle period, and obviously his ideas about harmony and music had grown along that time. And then finally he changed the finale. Originally there was an aria for Macbeth, and that's been cut. He did cut it for the 1865 version and inserted a chorus of Scottish nationalism, a hymn to victory, a hymn to glory. So I think there are other numerous little changes along the way. Some people have spoken about the fact there are certain musically stylistic inconsistencies between the two versions. But I honestly don't think that anybody notices that except extreme musicologists. It is of a piece. And it works beautifully. So the 1865 version with those changes that I've mentioned is the one that's performed today. Sometimes companies have performed both back to back, but ultimately it's the later version, which was Verdi's intention to be the one that lived on.
Now in the opera, Macbeth murders Macduff's whole family. This happens before the opening of the fourth act, and we get the so-called refugee scene in which Macbeth raises an army against Macduff. This is the one scene that's not in the original play.
I love that, because with Shakespeare, you get the common men, you got the servants, you have the townspeople, you have all of them in those mostly smaller roles. But Verdi did something that I love so much, and I think Shakespeare really would have loved this, is that all war, all treachery that is begun by either the aristocracy or the leaders of whatever government throughout the world, in whatever century, throughout time, it is the people that bear the brunt of the selfishness, the egoism, mm-hmm. of the violence. And so having those refugees there with their children dying and families separated and really, you know, before that aria of Macduff, so little hope for their country. Yeah. And then he does that brilliantly at the end of the banquet scene, I think. He starts there, doesn't he? A nest of criminals, a den of thieves, yeah. You know, they sing, right before the intermission. And it's haunting in its truth, because we can talk, say what you will about war, say what you will about ambition. The wisest leaders have been afraid of both.
This is followed by the famous sleepwalking scene of Lady Macbeth.
Lady Macbeth, certainly in the play, is more vulnerable than Lady Macbeth in the opera. I mean, in the opera, it's basically her idea to kill the entire tribe of the Macduffs. That was a shocking change for me.
She is bloodthirsty, and it's sort of un-Italian. But she's not a mother, which maybe has meant something to the Italians. No mother would do that.
I mean. No, that's right. And yet she does say, you know, I have given suck. So she was a mother for like probably a minute and a half.
Yeah.
And then to replace – it's interesting. She doesn't escape either in the play or the opera with the ramifications of ordering someone's death. I mean, she goes mad. He becomes a barbarian, but she goes mad, which says, in other words, what? I mean, she may be evil, but she also is profoundly vulnerable. You know who doesn't go mad? King Lear's daughters, Regan and Goneril.
Yeah.
They don't go mad. They end up killing each other. But they don't fall apart because they cause havoc in their country. But Lady Macbeth, in her core, she is not nearly as strong as she thinks. And that's interesting. So we're adding a few little things in the opera, just visual things, not music.
No, let Verdi stand alone.
We will. But we're adding some things visually that, for me, are absent in both the play and the opera. I mean, transition scene from her being a mighty queen to someone who has lost their mind.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll save that for when you all see the opera.
There's two scenes, I think, that musically where Verdi really nailed it, one of which is the duet between Lady Macbeth and Macbeth after he's killed Duncan, and she chides him for being so weak in the face of what he's done. And he talks about how the angels will bring revenge upon him. It's a marvelous piece. It's a piece that the history has it that the day of the premiere, Verdi wanted to rehearse it again in the soprano or the baritone. Said, but maestro, we rehearsed this 150 times. Mm-hmm. He said, we'll do it 151. Because that whole sense of drama was so important to Verdi. That's what makes him a great opera composer. The other thing is, of course, the sleepwalking scene, the fragility of the music, where you sense the fragility of her mind. It's a stunning piece of music.
It's a very, very long introduction before she starts singing, isn't it?
Yeah.
So I've added something which I think is really, for me, it really helps. It helps bridge that gap as to that she's crazy. And what she will be doing, I mean, this shouldn't ruin anything for anyone, is that during that very long piece of music, she sees him sleeping on the floor under a gray silk sheet. And she's in her nightgown, and she lifts up the sheet. And she tries to get next to him and tries to wrap her leg around him, and he doesn't want to be touched. And ultimately, he sits up and he exits, and there she is alone with her sheet. Yes, exactly. And then she reaches out, and what she's reaching out for, as you will see, is an invisible infant. And she puts this invisible child to her breast. I mean, so hopefully, within that, and then she does something else, but I will not tell you that because that's really shocking. Just shocking in terms of the psychological complexity of it.
It's a great scene.
It is a great scene, and Nadja really liked that idea. And I think the music is completely haunting in that sleepwalking scene. I mean, completely haunting. Yeah. You see someone who just is decimated.
Yeah, who's
decimated.
Who has lost it, I guess.
Yeah. She's gone. She's gone.
Barbara, you mentioned adding an invisible child that Lady Macbeth is reaching out to. If I understood correctly, you're planning to add several children to the opera, correct?
Yes. Well, first of all, as we know, they talk about having had children, but of course none of them survived. So there is an emptiness in their lives where they could have had children, and who knows, it might have changed them. Because ultimately, his ambition became her child. The ambition actually is what she nursed throughout their marriage. And also because she is responsible within the opera for the death of the entire Macduff family, and they had many children. And because I'm giving you the reasons, and because of the refugee scene with the children, so many children as part of families, and so many children, what are we left with? All of us, we're left with the children of our lives, in our lives, to carry on for us. And so I thought it was crucial that we had as many children as we could get. And so the Macduff children, those red-headed kids, will be in the march when Duncan comes in. It's not going to be a march. Duncan is going to come in. He's going to be greeting all the Macduff clan and Fleance, Banquo's child. And those children will be honored with gifts from the king. And then these children will be in some of the other scenes at the finale of Act One. Terrified, they run to their parents when they hear the singing. And in Act Two, everybody's terrified, so they run to collect their children because they don't now even know if they have a homes to go back to, considering the state of the land. And then, obviously, in a war, children die in that refugee scene. And then, of course, in the finale, that's what we're all alive for, isn't it? To make sure all of our children thrive. So there you have it in a nutshell.
In the end, Macduff's army is victorious. Macduff kills Macbeth and is hailed as the new king of Scotland.